everyone, Neil Bartelia. Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So this week I chat to Parag Agarwal. He's the co-founder of Janajal. Janajal's aim is to leverage technology and bring safe drinking water by innovating and promoting smart drinking water solutions. Founded 4 years ago, and they're doing really well. So in this podcast, we talk about how they deliver safe drinking water in India. We also talk about the water ATM concept, what it actually means. They have also received a significant amount of funding. We also talk about what it's like working with the Indian government. Parag also talks about his 3 decades of entrepreneurial life and the massive potential of Janajal. He also shares top project management tips as well. And we also talk about his time working in the jungles of Indonesia to selling email connections door-to-door in the mid-90s. And so much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Parag. Thanks for coming on the Indian Startup Show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Please tell the listeners what you're building.
Okay. We're trying to build India, and I dare say the world's first water sharing economy.
Wow.
What we're trying to do is basically work on the AAA philosophy, which is accessibility, availability, and affordability, and try and make safe drinking water a reality in the lives of the common man.
Excellent. How did you come up with the idea?
So I've been working with water treatment technologies for nearly 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And those were started with mainly projects at the larger level, such as water treatment plants, effluent treatment plants, watershed management, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But then we went on to realize that while I was working on all these projects, I understood the need for safe drinking water, mm-hmm. which was extremely acute on the ground, but completely disregarded as a need by the administrative side because it was too trivial an issue and almost taken for granted. So that's where I thought that there was tremendous potential to focus on this and basically deliver safe water, mm-hmm. to communities in a sustainable manner.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this whole idea really started.
How long has it been going for, and how are things going so far?
So Janajal as a company is 4 years old. We started working with specific water treatment technologies, mm-hmm. and very quickly came to realize that in India, water changes every 100 kilometers. These days, it changes every 5 kilometers. So no single technology can be the solution to making safe drinking water available. Therefore, we decided to adopt a very technology-agnostic approach. Mm-hmm. And also on the basis of the fact that people, as a consumer, they don't really care what treatment, what technology was used to treat the water. Mm-hmm. What they care really about is that once they consume that water, they should not fall sick. So therefore, we decided to shift the focus from technology and basically get into the end product, which is safe drinking water. And that's how Janajal was conceived.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You mentioned technology. How does the technology or how does the product actually work then?
So every water ATM the water ATM concept was conceived with the intention of building sustainability. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes what we've seen is there have been philanthropic and charitable organizations that set up water treatment plants, for hundreds of years almost. Mm-hmm. But they've never been maintained because there has never been anybody volunteering to pay the maintenance costs. Mm-hmm. So these systems typically suffer over time. Over time, the trust deficit also sets in very largely, and consumers stop taking water from such plants. So it is very important for people to understand. What this also leads to is a lot of wastage of water because mm-hmm. people tend, whatever is free is always wasted. So that's one of the reasons why the planet is facing such acute shortage of water mm-hmm. today. So what we decided to do is build in a sustainable model, bring in a small cost attached to the water. So when people pay for it, they only take as much as they need. Mm-hmm. And what they pay is actually helps in triggering off social employment opportunity, providing somebody gainful employment, mm-hmm. Paying for the maintenance, paying for the capex, and overall making the entire activity sustainable over longer periods of time.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So how many of these like ATM machines are deployed around India then? Would you say?
Around India, I think totally there must be about 1,000, 1,200 okay. systems right now, of which we have close to 300 systems, mm-hmm. of which the bulk of these have been installed under CSR over the last 4 years. But recently, the water ATM concept has received huge amount of validation from both the administrative side as well as the consumer side. Mm-hmm. So gradually, it's catching on. So we are building out the water ATM now very, very focusedly and aggressively. So in the next 12 months, Janajal by itself aims to have 1,000 systems installed and operating in India.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I mean, it sounds exciting. How big do you want to go with this then?
Well, I wish there was a way to really limit this somewhere. So, you know, it's so people ask us, what's the market size? And we say 1.2 billion people and 2 billion birds and animals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting that we also receive calls from poultry farms and from piggeries. Mm-hmm. And they call in and say that, you know, we have 100,000 birds and we need safe drinking water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the first question that our sales team asks them back is, first you got to tell us how much water does the chicken drink every day. And then we are told it's 1 liter a day. So the point is that a poultry farm that has 100,000 birds or there's breeding 100,000 birds, needs 100,000 liters of water every day. Mm. So that is the kind of consumption pattern or the consumption need or the demand on the ground. And I wish there was a way to quantify what is the level up to which we can scale. But this really seems like a very scalable and not only scalable, but also geographically scalable. So we can take this even beyond the shores of India. While we are focused only on India at this point in time, I feel, you know, personally, we are very, very bullish that going forward, being water, being a non-negotiable, you know, need on the ground, there is no way that this can be limited to any point in time.
You said you went for 4 years. I mean, what were the early days like? I mean, how long did it take you to get your first sale, for example?
The first sale, I think the first sale that we really took up a challenge. And so while we started in 2013, the concept really began to get wings in 2014 when Mr. Modi assumed office at the center. And that's when he brought safe drinking water and sanitation, basically wash facilities on center stage in India. And that is when everybody began to sit up and take notice. And when I say everybody, I mean the administrative departments all the way lower down. So over the next year, things really started moving, policies started falling in place, the administrative department started aligning with this particular need. So so ATMs really started picking up in 2015, and so we installed. In fact, you know, it's a little piece of history in our professional lives that the first ATM that we really installed was on 17th of September 2015, which happens to be Mr. Modi's birthday at Assi Ghat in Varanasi, which happens to be his constituency. So we took it to him, and his team was extremely appreciative of what we were doing, and they saw the value, they saw the merit. They saw the need, and they saw how this was the ideal way of bridging that gap between free water that comes out of taps and bottled oblique packaged water that is really expensive and unaffordable for the common man. Mm-hmm. So this seemed to be the ideal solution.
Mm-hmm. So are you bootstrapping this, or has this received funding?
So this has been completely bootstrapped from day one. We are a zero debt company as on date, but we were really fortunate that earlier this year in February, we got invested into by Tricolor Cleantech, a social impact fund based out of North Carolina, US.
Okay.
And so they've invested $5 million now in this company. They've been extremely passionate about the social impact angle, about the fact that for us, water is only a medium of delivering happiness to people. So they understand the vision, the mission, the entire ideology, the philosophy behind which goes into building Janajal and operating Janajal. And they've really supported us. So we're using that. We're using the funds right now to scale up the operations. We're now building. So previously we were almost compelled to build a wide footprint because we didn't really know which department was. Every department was very selectively and randomly adopting this concept. But now that it is becoming almost an acceptable norm for all municipal corporations, local administrative bodies to implement water ATMs in their respective areas, we are now focusing on building dense clusters where people can see more of this. They have access, at short distances. So the first effort that we are really making at this point in time is installing 100 water ATMs within the Mumbai region at railway stations.
Okay.
So as we all know, Mumbai, the lifeline of Mumbai is the railway network. Mm-hmm. So there are millions of travelers who, on a captive basis, travel every day, and that's the community we're trying to cater to.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Let's talk about you then. What's your background?
So I'm a plain vanilla BCom graduate. You know, I passed out my my 10th in 1985, finished my graduation in 1991, mm-hmm. and ever since I've been an entrepreneur. You know, I've never known any other way of thinking, any other way of working. Over the last 5 years, people have started referring to me as a technology evangelist, mm-hmm. because I've always had a penchant for identifying technologies ahead of their times, mm-hmm. and then working to basically bring them into India and basically marry technology with application. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, and that is one of the biggest challenges that I have experienced over two decades of working with technologies in India, mm-hmm. is that it's very important to sometimes roll back a particular level of a technology and bring it to a level at which it can meet the need on the ground and then start ramping up gradually. Mm-hmm. So very often good technologies don't get implemented because the environment is not ready for them yet. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've been able to do very successfully. I have been able to do very successfully.
Mm-hmm. So what was your first ever startup then? And what did you learn from it?
Oh, my first startup was in 1994. I identified a communication technology. Those days it used to be called electronic mail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, India hadn't heard of anything called electronic mail at that point in time. It went on to be called email. Yeah. And I would go door to door selling email connections in pairs.
Wow.
Because people didn't know who to send a mail to. And when I used to go around telling people that, you know, the world in the future will be only talking to each other by email, they thought I was nothing short of crazy. Yeah. And so, as I said, in fact, internet came into India in 1996, which then VSNL brought in. So the gateway was first set up in 96. So that's where I started. You know, we were again very ahead of our times. Technology was expensive. You know, back in 1994, we invested more than 10 lakh of rupees to set up a VSAT terminal for data transfer, which is unheard of, mm-hmm. those days, even today. So that was the first startup. You know, that was a successful exit to the extent that it didn't yield a lot of money for us, mm. but it was a huge learning curve, and I didn't lose money on mm. that particular venture. Mm. But going forward, the learning curve was so huge that we were able to adapt. So providing solutions, customized solutions, is something that that I've always done. So it's not as much as product selling, mm-hmm. as much as basically customizing a solution for a certain environment. Mm-hmm. Based on consumer preferences, based on the availability of resources, and then stitching all of that together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's been my forte.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn? What was the key takeaway from your first ever startup then?
The learning was to basically, you know, be able to sustain. Mm-hmm. So I think sustainability is the key for any particular activity, business, venture, relationship, and what have you. So I don't want to go into the personal aspect because then this it turns a different way. Mm. But the point I'm making here is one has to have the ability to sustain and be very agile. So that is one of the things that I really learned, is not to have a business plan that is so strongly hard-coded that you find it difficult or you do not wish to deviate from it. Because, you know, when you're building a startup, you have to learn, you have to operate that business with your ears to the ground. Mm-hmm. So you have to keep changing, altering, mending, correcting your ways, evolve your business model, develop a business model that that remains aligned with external forces and external factors that are occurring around us. So that is one thing I learned, and I think that is something that has really helped us tremendously, even as we've built Janajal. Because, you know, water lacks policy. There isn't too much of policy that binds and governs water. So it was very important to create a business model, to create an operating model, that is unanimously approved, accepted, endorsed, and yet remains sustainable, remains inclusive, and, you know, does not run into the typical inertia that one would tend to run into, mm. if something like this had to be done.
What would you say is the hardest bit about building this business then, would you say?
Well, the hardest bit that I see for most, and that even we really have to deal with, is the government interface. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to go and deal with them. We have to convince them. It took us two and a half years mm-hmm. to be able to get them to accept the fact that installing a water ATM actually makes them look good, mm-hmm. and not bad in the eyes of the public. Because initially there was this typical reaction that you're saying that we need to purify the water further one more time before having the consumers receive it. Mm-hmm. That means our water at source is bad. Now, so, you know, so there are certain fundamental mindsets which prevail, and graduating the consumer, who typically expects the government to make water available to them for free, and getting them to start accepting a new style of consumption, is graduating the consumption patterns, getting people to understand that they now will not get water on call through their tap. They need to actually step out and get 30 liters of water into the house if that's their household's consumption for drinking and cooking every day. So these are things that we are facing and we are dealing with well. And it's moving very fast. There is a concerted effort all around. Everybody is talking extremely positively about the concept. So that is one of the biggest achievements that we've made over the last 4 or 5 years, especially over the last 1.5 years, which is getting unanimous endorsement and validation for this, for water ATM as a concept.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the government. What's it like working with the Indian government?
Well, we extremely enjoy working with the government of mm-hmm. India. I mean, clearly one has to understand what are the things that one should not be doing. We have to understand how they can work. What are the provisions that they have, mm-hmm. and that only comes with experience. But having said that, if there's anything that has to be done at a national level, at a pan India level, at a level which is scalable, which brings in volume, the government interface is a must. And so one has to be able to put to deal with that, deal with the game of musical chairs, as mm-hmm. we call it. Mm-hmm. You know, people change, positions change, policies change. But having said that, that's why I said, you know, staying agile and remaining within the corridor of certainty mm-hmm. is the biggest challenge. And that is something that we are able to do very well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. It seems you've had a long entrepreneurial career. Anything that surprised you most about your entrepreneurial career so far?
Well, what surprised me most is the diversity mm-hmm. that has been deeply embedded into this almost 3 decades of an entrepreneurial journey. Mm-hmm. So the number of sectors that I've been exposed to, I've worked in, the kind of understanding of the number of regions, geographies, countries that I've worked in mm-hmm. over the last 30 years. And I mean, very honestly, no one ever plans it that way. I mean, everybody wishes that they had a lot more consistency consistency, only word that comes to me, mm-hmm. to my mind, in terms of how their career would be. But, you know, I was always up for a challenge. I've worked in the deepest jungles of Kalimantan in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. I've worked in the back of beyond in Madhya Pradesh, deep in the Bundelkhand area. I've worked in some very, very trying and testing conditions in Sudan, in the Middle East, mm-hmm. in Southeast Asia, and it's been extremely learning. It's been a huge learning curve, and that is something which has really, so I've always believed that, you know, it was all preparation ground for a bigger stage. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I can see how every aspect of the journey and every chapter that I learned from comes into play and helps, operate a business like Janajal, which allows us to, because understanding people's mindset on the ground, understanding people's needs on the ground, relating to them, connecting with them is very, very important. So, and that is something that we are able to do very well. So we are able to even inject that same mindset into our team members, into our people, mm-hmm. and that's what makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing in Indonesia?
So Indonesia, those were the days when I'm talking about almost 12 years ago, mm-hmm. when I was actually consulting for a very big business group in India that had acquired coal mines. So I was actually a partner with them, and I was responsible for looking into the logistics of going out, securing a coal mine, and making sure that we're able to excavate enough coal and bring it to the point of shipment so that it can be dispatched out of Indonesia. So Indonesia can be a logistical nightmare because of the fact that it's a fragmented country in terms of its 7,000 plus islands. Mm-hmm. It's not a landlocked country like India is. So the movement logistics, transportation logistics can be extremely, extremely challenging. But even there, it was a very successful journey, a very successful experience. Like I said, a huge learning curve, you know, to work in the deepest parts of Indonesia, you know, get into the jungles on a moped and come out of there is a story to tell by itself.
Excellent. We have a lot of entrepreneurs listening. What's the one quality they should have?
I have always said that risk appetite of an entrepreneur should be highest with their own capital. Very often entrepreneurs tend to feel a sense of relief when they get invested into, and they start becoming a little careless or a little random about the way they use the money. So it's very important to be careless with your own money. Mm-hmm. But the moment you get invested into, then the level of responsibility and the level of accountability that one should assume should be the highest that there can be, because only that and that discipline is what will lead to further growth. Otherwise, most entrepreneurs, they fall off the rails simply because the discipline is missing. So that is the one big lesson that I have learned, and I would really advocate very strongly.
Mm-hmm. Actually, looking back on your career then, would you change anything then?
I changed nothing. Mm-hmm. I changed nothing, because all of that has been extremely rewarding, extremely fruitful. So I am a product of my mistakes. I am a product of all my learnings, and I wouldn't want to change anything.
What's your management style like, and how has it changed over the years?
The management style has basically evolved from being hands-on to now empowering people. So, we clearly have teams who are given responsibilities. They're given the right to make mistakes. They're given the confidence that their mistakes is what the management will stand by. They're encouraged to take decisions, make decisions. Yes, what they're discouraged from is repeating the same mistakes. So that is something that has really grown over a period of time within me. So initially, there was always this feeling that if I don't do it myself, it will never happen. But I now believe that a lot more will happen. So you've got to do by having people do it, or by empowering people to do it. So I've now become a firm believer of the philosophy of do less to do more.
Mm-hmm. Last few questions then. What does this startup actually mean to you then?
At this point in time, it means everything to me. And when I say everything to me, not just in terms of my personal professional career or my journey in my own entrepreneurial pursuit, but more because this is a concept which connects with almost everybody. So there are very few businesses that bear the potential to become a movement, and a movement is only triggered when it is inclusive, when more and more people feel for it, support it, mm-hmm. they endorse it, and they accept it. And that is something that we are seeing. We are seeing it grow multifold every day. The kind of adulation we get, the kind of appreciation we get. We have people coming up and saying, look, I want to just do 1,000 rupees mm-hmm. worth of water. I want to give away this summer. Can you help us do it? And when we can actually help them do it, because we make that money go into a community and we give away free water to people worth 1,000 rupees, mm-hmm. that's when they feel that, so everybody, there is something to connect for everyone. And so this pretty much, it seems, this indeed is the first step to the development agenda mm-hmm. of the new India that the government is talking about. Because there is no smart city without safe water. So we feel fortunate that we are the chosen ones. And I say we because I speak for my entire team, not just myself. Mm-hmm. But each one of us feels extremely fortunate that we are the chosen ones to basically make this difference on the ground. Otherwise, each one of us could have been doing anything else in this world. And we'd probably do it better or as well. But, we feel extremely proud and, grateful mm-hmm. that, we are the nominated ones to be able to conduct this activity, and I thank God for the fact that we keep receiving this support from all quarters mm-hmm. as we go forward in this journey.
But let's say someone wants to do what you're doing, get into the social entrepreneurship. How do they get started?
The first thing is one has to develop a mindset. So social entrepreneurship is something where profit should not be the primary purpose or the primary motive. Mm-hmm. So yes, again, sustainability has to occur, has to take place. So profits are important. One has to sustain their own bills. One has to pay smoke their own chimney. But mm-hmm. having said that, for a social entrepreneur to come in. I mean, you know, they could start by simply becoming an operator at one of the water ATMs, to becoming a franchisee or setting up their own water ATM and operating it, or setting up a cluster of water ATMs, or doing so. I mean, there are so many angles to the to this entire activity, and that is something that we've been able to build very successfully, which is diverse ways of engagement. Right. So it isn't a hard-coded formula that's either it or nothing. That's not the case here.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So you must have worked on a few projects then. Any advice on project management for our listeners? You know, how do you go about delivering a project on time and with the budget, etc.?
Is agility. You know, the ability to take decisions that sometimes are against the run of play. So, for example, I mean, if there's a project, let me give you an example of how we work with the Indian Railways. Mm. So there are certain obligations and certain deliverables that need to come in from the other side, and certain things that we need to receive to be able to commission our ATMs. Now, very often we go there and we find that certain resources are not available, or they are yet to be made available by them. What we do is, in the interest of the project and staying within our, to keep within the execution milestones that are laid out, we go out and invest and even build those little resources so that our project can get enabled immediately, so that we can deliver more water. And especially this was very hugely appreciated by the railways, because we did this in the peak of summer, when every day was making a difference to people, because it was eventually delivering water to people. So we took certain decisions and assumed certain responsibilities that were not inherently part of our obligations. And so this kind of flexibility and this kind of malleability is what really holds an organization in good stead. And we are extremely proud to do that, because of this aspect, because we see how it just circles back very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So very often what seems like an extra expense or a cost outgo that is unprovided for or unnecessary or not your primary responsibility is not really a cost outgo. It is an investment, because what you do lose, you lose much more money in the cost overruns that are caused due to delays in the implementation. So if one can understand that, it works like magic.
Seems that you've done a lot in your life. Is there anything left to achieve now, would you say?
Yes, I mean, there's always more to achieve. I mean, it's a very humbling experience. It's been a very humbling journey. And, I clearly see, I wish that we can cater, we can reach out to more and more people. I mean, today we are focusing on India, but going forward, you know, Janjal has the potential to be in 100 countries within the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we'd really like to do. That is something that we aspire to do, we aim to do. And it's, again, as I say, it's not about profit. That will be required to keep the engine firing all cylinders. Mm-hmm. But there's no limitation on scalability. It's only about how much there is within us in terms of capability that we can, build this to. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot to achieve. I mean, there's a lot that a lot of people are doing around the world to have this planet function, and we are extremely grateful for the fact that, you know, this is the one aspect that we are contributing in our own little way.
Mm-hmm. So last question then, for people who want more information on you and Janjal, what must they do?
Well, they must Google us. They must look up our website, janjal.com. And, they're most welcome to write to me. Our email addresses are there. Mm-hmm. Just feel free and reach out. We are an extremely proactive company. We are extremely, we don't compete with anybody. It doesn't matter whether you belong to the same sector, same industry, an allied industry. So, we just about work with anyone and everyone. And so we welcome everyone. Like I said, this will not become a movement unless more and more people come in and engage, and we engage with them. So, we welcome and we encourage everyone to reach out to us.
Excellent. Actually, one last question. When you were selling email door-to-door, how many sales did you get?
So those days, we sold about 700 email connections.
Okay.
So which was huge. Because 700 was in our territory,
yeah.
out of which there were about 450 that we sold in somebody else's territory because we were selling them in pairs.
Right.
So if somebody lived in Pune and had somebody in Delhi so the Delhi territory was not mine.
Mm-hmm.
But we yet went out and closed that sale and gave it to the Delhi counterpart. So it also happened to be the Pune region. I mean, those days I was living in Pune.
Mm.
So the Pune region was number one in terms of the number of connections that we had sold.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some really, really significant corporate clients that we were catering to then.
Excellent.
So that was that seems like the you know the previous life.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, given where we are today and how we used to do it. So those were dial-up connections.
Yeah.
Very interesting story. You know, that's another discussion by itself.
Definitely. Parag, thank you for coming on the show today. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here, and I wish everyone the very best. And you know, thank you for having me here.
Awesome stuff. Thank you very much. Thanks for Parag for coming on the show today. That is the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating and review of the show. Just search for The Indian Startup Show on iTunes, Stitcher and Overcast. We are also on Pocket Casts, Downcast, Intercast, Pocket Kit and Apple TV. If you're building something exciting, please let me know. Send an email to hello@neilpatel.co or tweet @IndianStartupSH. Or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. We'd love to get. Thank you and goodbye.